Welcome back to Paris Lesbos. One of us is a pixie, the other gets called Rena. And today we have yet another side character, as I like to call these less famous and written about women in this part of history. She's mainly known for having dated the New Yorker journalist Janet Flanner. It's Noelle Murphy.
Oh, that's right, the girlfriend's girlfriend.
Born at the end of either 1894 or 1896, depending on your source, and to a wealthy accountant, Noelle is another of our side characters whose recorded life doesn't really start until they're married.
Do we know anything about where she was born or grew up?
We do know that she was a socialite whose father died before she was about 10 from her husband's brother's biography. We also know that she was once an aspiring singer. At 21, she is said to have joined an acting troupe under the name Noelle Haddon, but she quit in 1917 after 2 years with them.
So was Haddon her name that she was born with, or?
I have no idea.
So what else do we know about her?
That's actually about it before 1920. You see, in 1920, Noelle married Fred Murphy, a decorated veteran of World War I who survived his tank being blown up.
Oof, nothing like the terror of war to ground us after that elite upbringing.
They moved to Europe, particularly France, soon after, as doctors told him that it would be better for his health. However, his stomach ulcers worsened and he'd wake delirious, though luckily not feverish, in the middle of the night beside her. 4 years after the marriage, Noelle's husband died belatedly of wounds suffered during that war, partially from his thigh being shattered at the Battle of the Somme. She was inconsolable and refused to move more than 30 miles from where he was buried, which is how she came to buy the small farm at Orgeval to the northeast of Paris. I feel the need to point out this man had ulcers and was physically fragile before the war, and still argued his way into a field artillery unit before transferring to the tank corps.
Wow, so he was really going hard. That must have just been devastating for her.
And now, this sounds like Noelle became a rural nun. That was not the case. Noelle would keep in touch with her in-laws in the decades to come, though they would not be particularly close. In 1932, Noelle Murphy was seeing Janet Flanner.
Wait, where did this come from?
The two probably met when Janet tagged along on the 1931 trip to Berlin that Noelle went on with her sister-in-law, Esther Murphy Strachey. Before that, they may have seen each other in passing at Natalie Barney's Fridays.
Ooh, wait, she was going to Natalie Barney's Fridays?
Yeah, as I said, she's not becoming a rural nun. It is at this point we get some actual description of what Noelle was like. Some nameless human called her a veritable Viking.
Wait, from her berserker rages? What makes her a Viking?
I believe the next statement from someone else lends your answer, somewhat maybe. The artist Pavlik Chelichev said she was a blend of Greta Garbo and Marlene Dietrich.
What, in terms of force of personality?
I believe in terms of appearance.
So, by veritable Viking, they meant blonde?
Blonde, tall, Scandinavian-looking woman. I personally prefer Solita Solano's description, Solita Solano being Janet's other girlfriend, who thought Noelle was a careless, flamboyant Amazon in bright shorts and skirts, or something the peasants had never seen before, either for costumes or formidable motoring energy. I assume that last bit had to do with her driving a small Ford all over France and Germany when old friends like actress Catherine Cornell visited. We also get a little bit more about that singing and even musical abilities, namely that she also played a dwarf jazz piano and had trouble with the volume of notes, as her throat would throb and the note would slip. Janet also commented that she wiggled when she sang. So I just have the image of a small bird in a human costume.
Excuse you, a large bird. She's an Amazon, a Scandinavian.
By these accounts, we also learn that Noelle was not living poorly in that small farmhouse. She had a wine cellar and spent whatever the price was for opera tickets. This is despite the fact that her friends thought her poor, as her husband left her nothing.
But as we heard, one of the few things we know about her upbringing is that she had that wealth.
Well, it is assumed that she had her own income from her wealthy parents via inheritance. She was also not sentimental. She didn't get gushy over her dead husband, only claimed matter-of-factly that she still loved him 8 years after his death. Noelle also didn't like sentimentality in others. For one, she looked down on Ernest Hemingway's false manliness and called it tedious.
Ooh, burn. How did you like that?
She made him nervous. She also disliked Scott Fitzgerald, who pinched people when he was drunk.
Wow, so it sounds like she's just not vibing with any of these celebrities.
Yes, but she was still very much part of the wealthy set. In fact, some of her Park Avenue accent also started rubbing off on Janet the longer they were together. Now, speaking of Janet, you're probably wondering how Noelle reacted to her girlfriend's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Or you are if you haven't listened to the previous two episodes. It was all chill. There's no fight here. Solita and Noelle got on, though they weren't close friends. Solita did visit her at Orgeval. Admittedly, they had similar personalities, so perhaps it wasn't surprising. Also, because I can't help but throw this weirdness in. You remember Gorgiev? Weird flea analogy mystic Solita played secretary for. Noelle went to a few of these sessions, never got into it, but once complained of headaches to this guy.
Oh no, what did he say to that?
The response she got was liver, followed by a comparison of her to a camel or sparrow. This further...
Oh, you called it! You compared her to a bird, and there she is!
This further extended to him saying, "Now I look to see if you are male camel or female camel. I know not yet. But I know even what kind of mared you make. You ever see camel mared?"
What?
A.K.A. when you indulge your girlfriend's girlfriend's weird hobby group on a Saturday afternoon.
The more I've learned about this guy, the weirder he seems.
And now you know how I felt reading that book. Now, Noelle did travel with Janet, Solita, and two other women to Germany in 1933 for journalist work, though Noelle only tagged along, and I suspect Solita did too rather than working on an article.
I was going to say, is Noelle turning her hand to journalism for this?
No, Noelle doesn't seem to really ever work as far as I can tell. This was that trip during which Nazi soldiers crowded their dinner table one evening, demanding to see their papers and threatening deportation. This was in addition to the anti-Jewish signs that cropped up. Noelle wrote at this time to her brother-in-law Gerald and his wife Sarah that, "There is nothing I can say to say, except that as life is growing increasingly ugly, it may be better to be away from it."
The dark times.
And that leads us into World War II. Noelle stayed at Orgeval, but Solita and Janet fled in September through Bordeaux with 15,000 other Americans. Noelle worked for the heiress Anne Morgan for a time in the Comité Américain pour le Secours Civil, where she helped evacuate handicapped people from Paris. This did not stop Noelle from feeling bitterly alone and thinking that her uniform was pretentious. As the German army invaded France, Noelle and her co-workers were forced to make hard choices. They decided to abandon the elderly and take only the children. Yet, she decided that if Paris was taken, she would simply go to southern France and continue her work. As she declared, "I shall remain in France wherever there is a France."
Wow. They do say that immigrants can be the most patriotic.
She didn't even seem fazed that a bomb hit her car.
A bomb hit her car? What? What happened there?
Bombers were flying overhead, so passing British troops ordered her to get out with her pregnant women passengers in order to lie in a ditch. The fact that Noelle continued to refuse to leave France upset Janet and put a strain on their relationship. By August 1940, Noelle was simply sticking close to her small farm, was weary of good works, scorned governments, and declared herself an anarchist. Soon, the war cut off communication between Noelle and Janet. At some point, Noelle was ordered not to leave Orgeval, and had to report weekly to the local police. Like all other remaining Americans, she was considered an enemy alien after the U.S. entered the war. And then she was ordered to pack up her things and was carted off to an internment camp in Vittel. Friends in Paris interceded on her behalf, and it sounds like they got her released after 4 months. Noelle was again back in Orgeval, where she remained until Janet came over towards the end of the war, and found Noelle thinner than she remembered. As Hemingway had informed Noelle briefly of Janet's going-ons, Noelle was aware that Janet had gotten involved with Natalia Denese Murray during the war, while Janet was in New York. Noelle accepted this new addition, and her own relationship with Janet continued, though it was not the same as it was before the war. In fact, for a while, Janet didn't discuss Natalia with Noelle. I mean, as we saw from Janet's episode, she was not the best at juggling three relationships. There were other troubles, though. One of Noelle's fellow Vittel inmates wrote a book in which they suggested that Noelle had been an anti-Semite and a Nazi sympathizer.
Was there any truth in this? I have to clarify because, some of these dead ladies have made some questionable statements.
The only actual pro-German statements of Noelle's were about the German music she had been trained to sing and which she liked. During this time, Janet was furious, writing to Solita, "Noelle would rather strangle than have entertained a Nazi." I didn't find any writing about how this episode ended, namely if there was a lawsuit. Janet's biographer Wineapple doesn't conclusively mention if that part of the book was changed, or if Noelle publicly denounced the writer. Not long after this, Janet must have told Noelle about Natalia, because Noelle demanded the Italian woman not move to Paris. She would accept the relationship from a distance, but she was not going to have it on her doorstep. While it's not mentioned, I do wonder if she'd been writing to Solita about Natalia, considering Solita thought the Italian woman was cold, dishonest, and possessive. When Janet made the request to both Solita and Noelle to not write to her directly when she visited Natalia, as letters from them to Janet upset Natalia, Noelle asked if Janet wasn't more afraid of herself than of any demand that she, meaning Noelle, would make of her. She would also in later years mildly annoy Janet by addressing her letters directly to Natalia's New York apartment rather than to Janet's office at the New Yorker.
Sounds pretty reasonable, writing to your girlfriend at her house rather than sending them to her work. This sounds like a historical AHTA, not gonna lie.
I mean, Janet did specifically say, please don't write when Natalia's there.
Yeah, but Natalia seems like she isn't working with this pre-established polyamorous relationship.
Well, neither of us is a couples therapist, and the war years are progressing.
All I'm gonna say, if you're on YouTube, comment. Who's the asshole?
So post-World War II, Noelle stayed in Orgeval with trips around Germany and France as she'd done before the war. Friends continued to come and go on visits. At some point, Solita and her second girlfriend, Elizabeth Clark, moved to Orgeval after they bought a house near Noelle's. Janet would still visit them both there as well and tried to give Noelle money on occasion, as she was living more frugally than ever. Yet, she'd always put up an energetic squabble, always refusing the gifts. In about 1957, Noelle had an operation on an arthritic toe that had become so gnarled that she could hardly walk. She proved a difficult patient as she hated being an invalid. Like many such elderly, she lashed out at her nurses at the hospital on occasion. On others, she entertained them with her singing. At some point a few years later, Noelle fell down the stairs and ended up jamming two vertebrae together. Her arthritis only worsened. She once said to Janet that she wanted to go through old age clear-headed and acutely observant to the end. Her arthritis didn't allow for that. She would be completely paralyzed by the end of her life, lying abed and waiting to be carried down the stairs of her two-story home and into the garden. Noelle outlived both Janet and Solita, as she died in 1982 in France, at either age 85 or 87.
So what was her legacy? Did she show up in anyone's fiction? Did people write about her?
She showed up in other people's biographies.
Remembering that one that was like her brother's friends or whatever?
Her husband's brother's biography.
God, yeah. I mean, and it sounded like she lived a pretty crazy life. I guess this was before you could be a Paris Hilton famous for being famous.
Thanks for listening. For more stories of mostly sapphic women of the Belle Epoque, Roaring Twenties, beyond, and before, listen to our other episodes and follow us wherever good podcasts are found. We love your comments on YouTube, and we welcome ideas for who to cover next.
Especially when we run out of members in a polycule.
And remember, with the right attitude, you too can intimidate Hemingway.